Good morning and welcome to the September 3rd, 2025 Island County Commissioners work session. And Commissioner Johnson will be with us in a few minutes. She's greeting school children on their first day to school today. And so we're starting off this morning. We have Josh Weiss of Columbia Policy Advisors to talk about the legislative update. So what's going on, Josh?
Good morning, commissioners. Nice to see you both. It's been a couple of months. So I'm going to two things. My colleagues, Eric Johnson and Devin Gayton, are listening as participants, just as an FYI. I'm going to start a slideshow, and I thought I would walk through this. And then, as you know, feel free and interrupt, and then we'll have time for discussion. And keep in mind that I won't be able to see you now that, oh, let's see, whoops. Hold on 1 second. I need to share my screen before I switch over to PowerPoint. There we go. Now. Sorry, best laid plans.
It's okay.
I can't get to my little
nice AI photo though, Josh.
I don't think it is AI. I think it's this a little known secret that can you see my slide now?
Yes,
we see it.
A little known secret that the Legislative Service Center that works for the legislature here in Olympia has a photographer, and they take all sorts of pictures of Capitol campus that you can actually purchase for $5. And there's
Oh,
some really stunning photos of wildlife.
That is beautiful.
Other portions of the campus. So to my knowledge, that's not AI. So good morning. I'm Josh Weiss. I'm your legislative advocate here in Olympia. Today, my hope was that we'd talk a little bit about the 2025 session, both in terms of generally how things went, how WASAC did on their priorities, which is kind of a general county overview, how Island County did specifically on our priorities, what to expect for the 2026 session, and then some further discussion about our agenda setting and other interim activities, and opportunity to discuss and start having conversation brainstorming about what we might want to pursue in 2026 and what those next steps might be. So just in general terms, the 2025 session was the long session. The legislature adopted their biennial operating capital and transportation budgets. That was the big task that they had. The operating budget is now over $77 billion in expenditures. They raised over $4 billion over a four-year outlook. And that was an 8.2% increase in spending. It was an interesting budget because while they did increase spending in a number of areas, they also did reductions in some other areas. So it was really a large fund shift in many ways. One of the things that happened that we have not seen in, well, really any time in my professional career is that Governor Ferguson, when he was presented with the budgets, on the operating budget, he went down to a subsection level of vetoing at a level of detail we are not used to seeing.
I know
with
that.
all of those different vetoes, that was a total savings of about $25 million in the operating budget. One of the themes that you'll hear me talk about is just that we're all sort of getting used to and learning, you know, what the governor's priorities are, what his operating style is, and what to expect from him. So that was one of the big learnings this session. The capital budget, there's $7.6 billion in expenditures. The average local community project, which is typically what we compete in, we didn't actually get anything in this category this year, but was $578,000 per project. So I think you'll see later on when we're talking about Island County's priorities that we did, again, usually very well, like we usually do. Transportation budget now is up to $15.5 billion in expenditures per biennium, and they raised $3.2 billion in revenue, and that's over a six-year period, so not quite fair to compare biennium to the six-year period there. But The transportation revenue package was a big, really kind of in some ways a big surprise. It was a pretty significant lift for them this session. There were 1,900 bills introduced and 422 passed. That, for comparison, in 2023, which was the last biennial legislative session, there were over 2,000 bills introduced and 485 passed. So, actually, a somewhat smaller bulk of bills, both introduced and passed this legislative session. And Governor Ferguson only vetoed one of those in its entirety.
Josh, may I ask a quick, couple quick questions
Sure.
on this slide?
Yes.
So the less bills is because necessary to implement the budget. Probably we saw less of those, right? Less fiscal bills because we all knew we were facing a tough year.
Well, yes, probably in terms of bills that would cost money. It's interesting, the newer legislators that have been coming in, they have pretty significant policy objectives, and they haven't, they've been much more inclined to sort of introduce bills and see what catches hold.
Greg
And we
Nance.
also saw more tax and revenue bills this year. So I think you're probably right, but there are a couple factors there that are kind of interesting to ponder about.
The question is foundational to what I'll ask later about what's possible as we come into the next legislative session. And then I have a stake in the ground of I read an article in the Seattle Times that one of the they these are their words, not mine, budget tricks that was used was to defer out liability payments over future years. In other words, we're going to push those expenditures into future years in order to balance this year's budget, but someday they will come due. Those liability payments that the state is facing is due to the same liability issues that we face in local government with the joint and several, and the one, the facts that, we've had just these outrageous increases in sometimes specious lawsuits. And so just a placeholder, a question, you don't need to answer it. Is there appetite for addressing that risk because the risk is shared at the state level as well as with county governments? It's caused exponential increases in our liability insurance, settlements that have gone out, et cetera. So I just want you to placeholder that question because if the Seattle Times article I read is right, I'm hoping the legislature's feeling the same pain we're feeling. Not that I want people to share pain, but I want them to understand the pain we're feeling.
If I could, let's do talk about that when we get to our agenda. But if I could quickly answer in part, so I don't totally forget, I do think there is. So the article in Seattle Times and New York Times was interesting, right? Over $500 million in liability, primarily from the foster care system. And the state is definitely feeling that pain. And I've had at least one conversation with one budget writer who did not know whether they would be addressing the liability issue this session, but definitely thinking about the budget impact and what the implications were for that. So they are thinking about it at a leadership and budget level. And then the other thing I would just mention now is that when we talk about WASAC and their priorities for this next session, they anticipate at the September meeting here in a couple of weeks a proposal to put tort caps, joint and several liability caps on their legislative agenda as a recommendation because of this very issue. So you are thinking ahead very similarly to what's going on with this policy area.
Thank you.
Anything else on that slide? Okay.
No.
I think so this last session, these are, I said expanded WASAC priorities because these actually aren't all of them on the agenda that WASAC started out with this year. But the association had a very long legislative agenda. More bills that were important and became priorities were added. That was primarily the Public Safety Funding Bill, House Bill 2015. which became priorities as they were introduced. I put in green here the pieces that were passed, or like the CRAB Local County Access Road Bill. Actually, that those bills did not pass, but the program was established and partially funded in the transportation budget. So that priority was accomplished. We were disappointed by the legislature not ultimately passing the flexibility on the property tax cap. That really was because the governor put his foot down and said there was no way he was going to sign that. I do think that that is where that issue lands right now. I don't think there's really much legislative appetite. It doesn't sound like the governor has changed his position on that at all. Some significant pieces of legislation, though, did pass. The Medicaid reprocurement bill, House Bill. Oh, there's a typo there. I'm sorry. That's House Bill 1813, not Senate Bill. We weren't really sure that that was going to get through, but that, and it didn't get through in the form that we were really hoping. But in those conversations, there really was signal from some policy leaders in the legislature about willingness to relook at the changes that were made in 2017 about integration of healthcare and mental health care. So some maybe potentially more changes coming in that area. The public safety funding bill I mentioned, House Bill 2015, is a significant, both $100 million worth of grants that will be available for local governments for a variety of public safety funding activities, as well as a new local option tax that can be imposed by counties and cities for it's titled public safety, but it's very broad. It can include diversion programs. It can include indigent defense. Pretty much anything that is tied to the justice system, I think, or even the behavioral health system, I think you would be able to fund with those new resources. Not something necessarily we anticipated at the beginning of session, was a pretty big addition for us. And then finally, the one I would mention that passed is the REIT harmonization bill, the ability to use REIT 1 and 2 for the same uses, and to be able to use those funds for maintenance and operations, or maintenance and preservation. That was a policy change that WASAC pushed on for years and years and never made any progress on. And then just, because of Representative Paul and his work with the city of Oak Harbor, this was the year and it got through. So I feel like it's important to sort of keep some of these things in context of the larger county changes that we've been asking for over time, even though we're not seeing everything pass through that we wanted. And largely, the indigent defense was another disappointment this session. We still saw an additional $10 million in that funding, which is more than we've ever seen them increase in any time in recent history. So it was a big year for counties. I'll pause here again and see if you have questions. Although I'll say again, I'm happy to back up at any time if you think of something later. But any questions on
Sure.
this?
We were very happy with the changes to REIT. That really is going to make a huge impact on our ability to do our budget this year. It couldn't have come at a better time. So that was wonderful. Can you tell me, maybe Janet knows all about this, but can you tell me about the Rural County Coroner?
Yeah, so this was a bill that WASAC put forward as a priority primarily for, I think there were about six very small counties. I believe the only one on the west side that would have, Pacific may have benefited, but I know San Juan County would have benefited. Several years ago, the legislature got rid of the flexibility for counties to have the prosecutor operate also as the coroner in very small counties, and said that every county had to have a coroner. So essentially increased costs for some of those smaller counties that were below the population threshold. This bill would have basically provided a, it wouldn't have gone back exactly to old law, but it would have provided a funding mechanism for those small counties to get reimbursed by the state for that new
Okay,
added
that really
cost.
doesn't relate to us.
It would not have benefited Island County. Yeah.
Janet, do you have any other questions
No,
about that?
I'm good on these. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Josh. This is good.
Yeah. So I also feel like Island County had a very good session. We asked for $1.3 million for the Aituba stabilization construction. We received $927,000. That was a very respectable additional funding for that facility. Continue to see our delegation be very bipartisan, very supportive of that. We were not successful on getting capital funding for the election office security improvements. And I really do just think that's because the delegation needed to, make some priorities. I was frankly very surprised. I don't think, Commissioner St. Clair, you can correct me if this is wrong, but I think when we started out with this request for an additional veteran service officer funding, we didn't think we were going to get funded this year. And
No, I had direct conversations with the sponsor of that bill who said it was going to go to unserved counties first, and then we benefited from it. So I'm not especially grateful for that because we do have the highest number of veterans per capita, and the amount of dollars we're putting back into the pockets of our veterans has been really significant. So these are the things that help veterans not be homeless, be able to access the care they need. We had one veteran who was served, received back benefits, and was able to purchase stable housing. And that's the kind of stories I think that are important to tell.
It's interesting. We haven't actually talked about this, but Representative Shaver's Veteran Service Officer bill was very helpful for other jurisdictions. This is actually provided in the budget for our Veteran Service Officer. And this is building on, I think it was 2 years ago, or maybe it was last year, that we got our first additional Veteran Service Officer funded. We're now in there for two. They doubled it. We will want to circle back to this and think about how we protect that
Good.
and make sure it doesn't get removed in the budget reductions I think they'll be considering.
We did reach out. Our human services director and deputy director Bill Larson is working on this. We did reach out to Rep. Shavers. There was an administrative request we made to adjust the funding to match the year because, of course, it passed. And by the time we get the contract signed, they kind of split the funding, but we're not able to completely staff it for this year. He was interested or supportive of trying to make sure that we can push some of that funding into the second year so that we're fully funding both years. That was just an administrative request that our Human Services Department made.
That's great. The youth behavioral pilot, they again funded that for another biennium at $300,000. That's awesome. You're all aware that the governor vetoed the study that was in the capital budget for the Cama Beach cabin study. I know there's a lot more discussion and context going on there, but just an interesting sort of development there. We had talked early on before last session about the need for suicide prevention structures at Deception Pass. The transportation budget doesn't really provide much in the way of new projects at all. It really was almost a maintenance level transportation budget, even though they raised new revenue. So getting close to $1 million for, taking next steps on that project is a pretty big deal. And then last, the ferry advisory committees was not something on our legislative agenda because we didn't anticipate it would be discussed at all. But the fact that the ferry advisory committees are not suspended, continue on through the biennium in the transportation budget, even though there is a study funded for how WashDOT should be better obtaining customer service information. So that is a developing issue, I guess, is what I would say. Anything else on this?
Well, regarding Ferry Advisory Committee, is there anything that, I mean, we aren't at that place yet, but is it a thing that we need to be watching?
I think so, yes. I do.
Okay. A placeholder again. Request to the governor, not sure how to most effectively push it. WASAC has done our job in terms of appointments, and there's two places where I'm going to say one is State DNR, the Forest Practices Board. We're waiting. There's no representation from Western counties that I could see on that board at this point in time. There's three excellent candidates, especially the one from Jefferson County. How do we get the governor to move on those? The other one is the Transportation Committee, which of course oversees the ferry issues often. And we had a discussion at our Council of Governments about the fare increases, some other things, and yet there's not Western County representation that I saw online. Now, the website may not be updated, but I want to make sure that Western counties are represented on those two important places, Washington State DNR Board, Forest Practice Board, and the Transportation Committee. So those are just placeholders. You can help us figure out how to navigate.
Yeah, that's actually interesting. I haven't gotten this kind of request directly from a client county before. I know that, so we should talk about whether or not you want to weigh in specifically with the governor's office to have them act more quickly on some of those specific positions and what they would, how they would respond to Island County specifically weighing in. And I also
Yeah,
don't know how WASAC
exactly.
would react to that, but I do know I had coffee 2 weeks ago with the governor's natural resource advisor, and he mentioned the Forest Practices Board specifically. I know they're considering their options there. I also know that they have, I believe, literally thousands of these appointments to do. So it might actually make a difference for you to weigh in and say, hey, these are the most important for us. And if you'd look at it, we'd appreciate it. So we could talk more about that.
The reason about the Forest Practices Board, just to give context, is they're going to be making some judgments about riparian areas, and that has land use and implications for local government. So that's my nexus, and maybe this is a WASAC conversation, but I got your ear.
No, I think it's an interesting question to think about whether the county individually should weigh in. Okay, moving on. So what we expect for the 26th session, it's going to be the short session. Bills introduced in 25 but not passed are going to be eligible again for action. And we gave to you earlier, I believe it was at least a month ago now, pretty detailed report on bills that we think are something to look at again that are left over that are possible to move forward. Now that we have a little bit more time in the interim to assess them a little bit better, we're just trying to remind clients to make sure there's nothing in the in that list that's particularly concerning or that you particularly want to support. I would specifically mention, and WASAC is going to talk about this in September. Kitsap County is asking other jurisdictions to support House Bill 1743, which we've never talked about before. It's a liability bill for smaller community healthcare providers, and it would have the state reimburse them for malpractice claims that are made against the provider when they're providing services in the jail. The intent, it's coming from Representative Simmons, who is from Kitsap County. The intent is to try and reduce a barrier that is currently there for those local community providers to be providing healthcare services inside the correctional facilities. So Kitsap County is going to ask WASAC to weigh in on that one. It seems like a good piece of policy, but I just highlight and flag it for you as an example of something that we might want to think about getting a
I don't see it
proactive.
in here that I can find. Can you send us that when you get a minute?
Yeah. And it was in the, it
Oh,
is in
there
that
it is. It's at
list
the
of,
end. I
yeah.
found it.
Okay. The first day of session is Monday, January 12th. And in between now and then, we have nine legislative elections, which is a lot. I'm sure you're sort of tracking that because it's been in the news. That's because of appointments to the Ferguson administration from the legislature and in the sort of domino effect that that has from Senate to House races. There's no chance that the majorities are going to be impacted this session. But everybody is watching closely those off-year elections for sort of the general electorate response to the general tax packages that were passed this last legislative session. If the primary is any indication of what's going to happen in the general, which we know is not the case, it doesn't seem like there is any sort of ripple effect, that the electorate doesn't seem to have be the Their concerns about affordability in the state are not at this point being reflected at the ballot box. But we will see. We have two revenue forecasts coming up now before session. I apologize, June 24th is also a typo that happened already. But at the later this month and then in November, there will be revenue forecasts. The June forecast was down. Below even what was forecasted in March. Essentially, it showed, and I sent out a brief summary when that came out, but basically, it showed that if the state had not passed that tax package, they would be having to make very significant cuts to the budget. Since then, we get monthly updates on revenue collections. So we have July and August. And cumulatively, since June, they are about $130 million higher than what was forecast in June. So there is great concern about the budget situation, both just in terms of the economy and our revenue collections going to be slowing down, but also obviously in terms of federal impacts, particularly to Medicaid. But, you know, again, I hate to be too optimistic, but those two monthly collections are better than they were expecting. So hopefully it's not going to be as bad as we're bracing for. Governor Ferguson will have his chance to do his first full complete budget proposal for the supplemental year. We expect to see that in early or mid-December. He has not asked agencies for cut proposals yet, but the direction going out to agencies is basically, you know, don't ask for anything new that's not just absolutely dire. This will be his first chance to really indicate and show what his policy priorities are. We heard very clearly from him during the campaign and before last session that public safety and number of officers on the ground was a priority. But this will be the chance to see sort of the big picture and what he really puts an emphasis on. So that will be everybody's interested in seeing what happens with that. So, in terms of the rest of the interim and our process for setting the legislative agenda, as always, you know I'm a broken record on this. I do recommend that you focus your legislative agenda on items that only you are going to champion. It's perfectly fine to come behind WASAC or other entities that are pushing items and support their efforts, but we need to remember that for the pieces that only Island County can ask for, we need to be taking the lead on. I mentioned this before about the Veteran Service Officer funding. We need to be prepared to defend that and anything else that we think of against possible cuts. We know they're going to be looking at cut scenarios. I'd be very surprised if they didn't. I think there will be opportunities in the capital budget. They left about $300 million in bond capacity left on the table. That's almost a third more than what they typically leave for the supplemental year. Having said that, you know, it's always nice to be judicious and not be asking the delegation every year. We've been very help successful in the capital budget. But if we do want to ask for something, I would love to have the details of that scoped out and have those discussions pretty well fleshed out by the end of October so that I can get a jump start on getting the forms filled out and prepared in timely fashion. If we'd wait till beginning of the session, it's too late to not enough time to actually get those filled out in detail. And then I mentioned returning bills. We talked about that pretty thoroughly. I know that I've had some conversations with you about some ideas that are percolating there at the county. Had a good conversation with Mr. Morris in your public health department and Jamie Bodden with Wasalfo about following up on the wastewater treatment study that we were successful getting funded at the legislative level 2 years ago. And the idea of asking for some capital resources to do an innovation pilot for rural wastewater treatment. I'm really impressed with Sean's thinking on that. And he's talking with you about how that might look. So if that's something that you want to move forward with, we should, continue to get that scoped out and ready to go. I do think that's a very, from my perspective, I think that's a very viable project. I think it would be well received by the legislature. I know as well that you've been thinking about jail improvements, jail infrastructure needs. The jail infrastructure work group is going to be coming back with its final recommendations in December. We know that I've heard from others that Senator Dingra is thinking about a potential funding pot of money in the capital budget for statewide jail capital infrastructure. I think if you are well thought out in terms of what you think you would need, it would be, I think we'd be well positioned to sort of get ourselves at the front of the line of that thinking and be supportive of her preparations for that. And I'm sure there's other ideas out there and don't want to cut that off. We can talk about that in a minute. I just want to point out that we have two legislative steering committee meetings before legislative session at this point. One in about 2 weeks on the 18th in Ellensburg, where WASAC will the LSC will be adopting the legislative agenda. As I mentioned, what I've heard is that the only new item coming forward would be that idea of a cap on joint and several liability claims. We also, I mentioned reaching out to the governor's office on those appointments. It's not too early to be reaching out to the governor's office, legislators, our own delegation, and other agencies about possible requests that we want to make. And then legislative committee assembly will be December 4th and 5th this year. They are doing it jointly between the House and the Senate. And that's an opportunity if we're going to run any policy bills, to be collecting signatures and talking to legislators. And just, a reminder that short sessions, we probably will only have 3 weeks of hearings in the first before the first cutoff. So it's going to be really compressed and kind of a challenge to run policy bills this year. So with that, I'm happy to answer questions. This is where I'd love to have, any discussion that you are interested in, any thoughts, brainstorming on possible ideas. I put this cartoon in here. It's from 1907. I have a book that has some old political cartoons from Olympia. And in 1907, they were already complaining about the state budget expanding. So, yes, we increased taxes this year. This is a, there's nothing new under the sun. So I'm going to stop screen sharing and happy to hear if you have other questions or if you have any further brainstorming on possible ideas.
So we haven't had a chance as commissioners to talk about what our priorities are in this type of venue yet. So this is a great opportunity for us. Commissioner St. Clair, did you have something you wanted to say?
I would say from a money perspective, my top priority is the wastewater proviso and the work you've been doing with Jamie and Sean Morris as an ask to our legislature. It helps us move forward in our comprehensive plan to entertain that pilot, and then perhaps in future years, when DOH opens rulemaking, make some requests of DOH. That'd be my top priority. I mentioned the admin fix to the VSO funding. That's a pretty little thing. May not even need to be on a platform. I have a question whether there's any possibility that they will release the ability for Cama Beach to continue the study, because I know part of the governor's concern was consultation with the resources they have, or is there anything that we could say to the folks over on about the Cama Beach Park study that they were trying to move forward?
I don't know. I think Before saying anything on that, I think it would be good to have a conversation with the delegation and see what they're thinking. I know that they're paying a lot of attention to this, and just see what they're thinking the next steps are, before we get, too far out in front on anything.
The other stuff that I think about is much more WASAC, like Sam Lowe's County Roads Bill, getting that further across the finish line, some of those other things.
I don't know, Commissioner. I don't know if that's going to be necessary because they did set it up in the transportation budget. That's a good question to ask at WASAC.
Okay. On a WASAC level, of course, operations for our behavioral health facilities, we appreciate the funding for capital. We need operation funding for those, but that's again a WASAC thing. And I'd already talked about joint and several, so I'm supportive of that.
Jill?
Hi, Josh. Sorry I was late. I was first day of school. Go Olympic View Orcas. We're paying for you this year using REIT dollars because REIT dollars allow us to work on infrastructure type projects. So I'm gonna lean in hard on the wastewater proviso in order to ensure you're gonna get paid.
That sounds like a great priority.
I think given what we know about the budget and the short session and different things, some of these language changes might feel like wins for the legislature as well as being wins for us. And so I think that that's kind of a safer focus, and we might be more successful. We do have the needs assessment done for the jail. We have not gone out to have community meetings about how realistic the needs assessment is in terms of their willingness to pay. But we do have that initial assessment, but we have something we can give you. So that's kind of the status on that. I don't know like specifically what in that needs assessment might be more interesting to you or might be more successful down at the legislature, but we do have our $100 million estimate back, and that's super enjoyable. So, I mean, I think those are probably the highest priorities. We've got some infrastructure fixes at the county, but the legislature usually doesn't get excited about a new HVAC system for us or new wiring for a jail that we're going to replace. So, I'd say wastewater proviso fixes, any language changes we can get in there that would give us flexibility or pilot projects for counties made up entirely of islands, if they want to just keep it narrow and not take a risk statewide, we would take that. That's right.
Can I just briefly respond? I do think to be clear, I think the wastewater proviso capital request is a really solid request, assuming we can pull all the details together. Having said that, I have seen the legislature fund HVAC requests, as you specifically mentioned, and especially with Climate Commitment Act dollars now being available. So to the degree that you have something like that that you want to put together, maybe just as an alternative to see if if your delegation wants, sometimes they come to us and just say, "Hey, look, I've got an additional $50,000. Can you come up with something?" Sometimes it's nice to have something in your back pocket.
Well, we could send you our capital improvement plan, our list, and then maybe you could look through that and see what in there might be at the right dollar amount or might be in most alignment with their interests. Because anything we can pull off that list and get help with is helpful, right? And so rather than saying this is our highest, I mean, everything on that list is pretty high for us right now.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's a great idea.
Okay.
So I have three things. Two of them are actually law changes or code changes. The first one is, I mean, you mentioned the pilot for the infrastructure, for septic infrastructure, but we're going to need them to change the codes to allow the new technology. So it's more than money for a pilot project. It's actually a change in what's allowed regarding technologies in the state of Washington. So, And Representative Shavers is in support of this, and so he's happy to be the champion of it. So that's my first one. The second one actually also is a RCW change. So we at Island County have a public health officer. And then we have our backup person who serves as our backup for our public health, who is a regional person who, for some, maybe one of you remembers better, we that position went away. And so we don't have a backup public health officer. And so we have, it's actually Dr. Sean Morris. He's a naturopath. He's a licensed naturopath in the state of Washington, and he's highly regarded in Washington. He's been nominated by his peers in public health leadership to be appointed by Governor Ferguson to the Public Health Advisory Board, for example. But he is willing to be our backup public health officer. However, we've been told by our prosecuting attorney that the RCWs allow both two different kinds of doctors, but they don't allow naturopaths. Anyway, I have all the information on it. The reason is because naturopaths aren't trained to do surgeries in the same way that other physicians are. But I'm having a very hard time identifying what surgery has to do with the job of a public health officer. We don't do a lot of surgery
in Island County.
And so,
speaking of joint and several liability,
exactly. So what the prosecuting attorney has suggested to us is that we look at change, take action with regard to trying to get the state to change what is defined as a physician for public health officer. So that's one that I haven't talked with my colleagues about this, but I would imagine they would be in support of that. And then with regard, you said that the state has been known to pay for HVAC. And Jill made a very important comment about sending you our whole capital projects report. But we do have one that is, for me, and more of an emergency, and that is the electrical system in the building in which we sit. Maybe you've heard about our disastrous electrical system and our worry about bad things, the potential for bad things happening here in this building. Yeah. And so,
which, by the way, houses our servers and our jail. Yes. So it is pretty critical.
Our public works office, I mean, our permit counter, our public health permit counter. All this is the building that the citizens come to when they want permits for things.
And mm-hmm. us.
And us. Let's not forget us. Anyway, it is a critical and immediate need. We are approaching the federal government with regard to helping us perhaps with both the electrical system and with the septic. So it isn't that we're that pilot project. So it's not that we're just looking at the state. We are looking at other opportunities as well. But both of those things are dollars that are beyond what we here at Island County are able to take care of right now.
Our electrical panel is what's bad.
That's right. It's the panel. Thank you, Jill.
Got it.
It's placed strategically below the water line.
It sparks sometimes.
Yeah.
That was a joke, right? Strategically.
No.
That's the truth. That's the truth.
This is really, really, really a critical issue for us.
It is. And okay. When it was installed 40 years ago, and all the people associated with that they're not in business anymore. And so
we laugh about it because it's so overwhelming that's the only thing we can actually do.
It is an overwhelming right. thing.
It's,
do you have
it's
a,
bad when you're calling your new facilities director Sparky.
That do you have any funny. Sense of what the total cost on that might be, just like ballpark?
It's a million.
We put a million as a placeholder in the CIP, yeah.
Okay. I think we could piggyback, right? Our delegation will remember the work that we did and the money that we got for the backup generator.
Mm-hmm. Right. Same thing.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. Sounds like some good ideas. Do you have a, are you at the point with the jail study that, or the jail replacement that you need design dollars, or do you have the design?
We don't have the design. It's our, we're going to do community outreach, and then I think we'll end up having to scale it down and then do design based on kind of what we hear from the community's willingness to pay. What we have right now is the initial analysis of what we need and three sites we're choosing from. And then, so we haven't paid for any of the schematic design work yet. So that's where we are.
Is it realistic that you would need design money before and be able to spend money on design before June 30th, 27?
Yeah.
We're going to do design the end of this year, the end of 2026.
I mean, even if you, I mean, I do think that this would be worth putting forward in the context again of if Senator Dingra starts looking for a preliminary list of projects, that even if you don't know exactly what the community wants, you know you're going to need to design something. Their views on what you design and where isn't going to obviate the fact that you need to do a design, right?
Right, that's
Right.
right.
We met with Senator, we met with Representative Davis. The sheriff met with her and about the jail modernization work that's happening that you've mentioned. We met with Senator Dingra about House Bill 2015. She was very excited by the work that our Law and Justice Committee was doing and by the already, the work we've already done, the investments we've already made in Island County that align with the legislative intent of 2015. So she expressed interest in that which you just said.
Okay, that's awesome.
We can get the needs assessment over to you as well.
Yeah, sure, that'd be great. I think I'll send you all a sort of follow-up next email as we start to sort of flesh out some of these ideas and try and figure out what's, you know, what's ready to go and what needs to wait a little bit more.
On Commissioner Bacon's request about the backup public health officer, the question of what is a licensed physician according, you know, to what was established in 1930 certainly doesn't apply here. So there's that. There's also the does his doctor in naturopathy, is that equivalent to a master's in public health? Because a health officer must have a master's in public health or its equivalent. So if we can get clarification and or amplification in code that allows us to do common sense things, that would be great.
Okay.
Even if they just make the change for counties made up entirely.
Jill's on that now.
Yeah.
I love it. I hear it from another client as well.
Can imagine. What else that you got?
Is Greg Nance's bill on the mosquito fleet going to float again?
Well, it's floating. The question is whether it ever
Sorry.
moves. I don't know, Commissioner. That's a good question. I need to reach out to him and see what he's thinking. My gut says no, but I'm not sure.
The reason I thought of it is you mentioned the other county that might be lobbying you is okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a question. You don't have to answer this right now, but as the fact conversation really brings it up is, you know, to the degree that there is broader ferry work going on, you know, my assumption is that you want to be involved and want to be engaged in that, and I'll, you know, continue to be looping you in on that. I'm not sure it doesn't seem like it's ever risen to the top of your list in terms of we want to, you know, want to go out and make the mosquito fleet bill happen. But I know it's an important set of issues for you. So please do keep me informed as your thinking evolves on that or changes. I think I have what I need for now to take these ideas and get a little more flesh around them and start to see what's real, and then I can put together a draft agenda for you in the next, 6 weeks or so. Does that work for you in terms of next steps?
That okay, 6 weeks?
6 weeks seems like a long time, Josh.
It's end of October, yeah.
I mean, he got two of you now.
Three.
There's
We
three of us.
three. I
I
mean, right. I mean, what, Eric's just riding your coattails or what?
this is an awesome opportunity to talk about him since he's in the attendees list, but not a panelist.
We're pretty much in alignment on our top couple of priorities.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's the good news this year, is we want to focus on some of these infrastructure issues.
I agree. I think the question in my mind is, yeah, you're right. It's not as much what would be on the agenda. It's more like the detail for the request forms and making sure that there's enough detail there that we can make a legitimate request. So.
The reason, we know that we need to reach out now and not wait till January. And we also know that as we come into the holidays, our legislators often will be on vacation or take some time off, as they're entitled to do as well. And so anything we can have in hand to do early lobbying, we would probably appreciate.
Yeah, don't let me discourage you from getting an early jump on this. When is your two questions related? When is your COG legislative briefing, if you know, and do you want to do a delegation briefing separately from the COG meeting, or do you want to just use that with in addition to some individual outreach to the members?
We
Does that
have
make sense?
COG on the third Wednesday, is that right?
Yeah.
Of September, or the third Wednesday in October. We're still finalizing agendas with the chair. He's not here. He's Kurt Gordon, and but either of those would work. We don't do an aligned policy platform, but that's when the county would say, this is our policy platform.
Yeah, I know in years past that we've had a little bit of an issue where we haven't quite nailed down our agenda, and then the COG briefing happens, and we're not quite finished yet. So it would be nice to make sure that we've got, the finalized
Before the
materials
call.
for you for that meeting at a
Yeah,
minimum.
we'll just put it in October then.
Yeah, if that's the case, we can put it, we can make the COG agenda for legislators be the October. That makes sense.
Well, do you have a November meeting?
No, we're in leadership in November. We're
Okay.
with WASAC.
Oh, right. And you don't have a December COG meeting.
No.
Eh, it sort of's hanging out there.
Okay. Because November, December is usually when we do delegation meetings. Okay, October.
What is
Okay,
the
we'll
third
get
Wednesday?
we'll I'm gonna have a
Fourth
document.
Wednesday. Sorry, fourth Wednesday. I was wrong.
So that's the 22nd.
We can make ourselves available for the delegation in December if we need to without COG. We
Yeah.
don't need to dilute our stuff with a foot ferry from the South Whidbey Port, for example.
I just want to make sure that if the COG has a meeting with the delegation and you're being asked to put forward your legislative priorities, that we have them identified by then and that
Yeah.
you'd have a document
At
you
this
can check.
point, because we're already in September, it's got to be October, because legislators don't turn on a dime.
Yep.
So if we're going to invite them, we should invite them in October and get that done.
Okay. I'm gonna start drafting you guys a
I'll
document.
say love to that this year.
Why?
We don't know. I just
Okay.
know
How
that the
how
chair.
about the vice chair calls the chair and we'll discuss it.
Sounds good, Janet. You guys will work it out yourselves.
To
Because
be
I don't see
clear,
why we wouldn't.
sorry.
Sorry, internal dynamics. We'll figure it out.
No, I apologize. I interrupted. I want to be clear. I'm not pushing you to have the COG do anything with the delegation. I just want to make sure that if you do, as in years past, that we have your document done by then.
it's done in 5 weeks, we're good to go.
Okay.
Oh,
Sounds good.
crap. We have an
I'm
open.
not as worried about getting your agenda document done as I am getting all of the details needed for those projects and making sure that they're ready
Well,
to
just
go.
ignore.
And
Wednesday, October 22nd is the first day of the WCRP conference. We'll just miss the first day of it.
Oh, that's fine.
okay.
Okay. Anything else, anybody? Well, we're very, very grateful to you, Josh.
Likewise, this was a good discussion, and it's nice to see you all, and I feel like we're in really good shape this year. So
Absolutely.
more to come.
Thank you. Thanks,
Okay.
Josh.
Take care. Bye, everybody.
Bye. So now we're going to move to the next part of Commissioner's office, which is the appointments to a variety of committees. Good morning, Layla.
Good morning. We have a few appointments. First, we have items two and three on our agenda today are both appointments to the Board of Equalization. We have one to fulfill a position that was vacated, so that one will go through April 23rd of 2027. And then the second vacancy would fall under the 1 year appointment that we've been doing, unless the board wants to make a different choice there.
So let's talk about the 1 year term issue for just a minute. I was at a one of our advisory committee meetings yesterday, and they were trying to decide whether or not they move forward with an appointment request or not because the 1 year thing, and they didn't know. It was a lot of confusion. I think all of our advisory committees are confused. Do we have any idea when we're going to get the information on from that consultant regarding
I know I've given you all a draft. I will have to check with staff to see if there's been movement. I know that Catherine's been talking with the consultant, and I think there were a couple items of information they were still waiting on, but I'm not sure exactly, but I can find out for you.
So were all of these 1 years that we did this year, were they ending, like if we appoint
From date of
someone
appointment.
from date of appointment? So, okay.
And there's options. You could just extend all of those appointments that were made in 2025 for an additional year. As a one easy thing, and then or you could extend them to full terms. Like there's options also with those things. And it's obviously at the board's discretion if you want to continue to do with the 1 year appointment or if it doesn't
You're
seem to
going to
be
be able to
working.
have a decision made on the. I would just continue the 1 years unless we're ready to make a decision on how we're going to do those appointments. I
Right.
mean, that's. I don't want to continue them to the old tenure if we haven't even had the chance to discuss the findings and what we were given. But I also don't want to stop the work of these committees. So if we have to extend them for another year while we finish that work and get to a place where we're making a decision, that's fine. That's my opinion.
That would be a relatively easy solution.
I mean, I really want to have the conversation about what we need to do for these committees done by the end of the year. We thought we would have the conversation and be able to make the appointments by the end of the year, but what's going to happen is we're going to need to recruit under the new framework. And so we've got to have that conversation, and we'd also need the relative department heads that have committees in the room so there's complete clarity, because I'm a little confused that all our advisory committees are confused. I feel like we've been kind of clear about this, but I don't have a problem with doing a year appointment, and then we can extend for a year or 6 months. But we do need to have that conversation and decision, I feel like, by the end of the year. We've been talking about it for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so it needs to get closed out, and we need to get that going and put a period at the end of that sentence so we know what we're trying to do with these committees. Because I don't want people to feel like they're not our first choice. And right. I don't like that kind of vibe that's hanging out there. That's right. Not it. It's that we're not getting diverse voices giving us policy feedback. And that is unhealthy for the organization and the citizens as a whole. So we've got to figure out how to fix that. And hopefully those recommendations will do that. So I'd say that we do the year appointment now. And when these renewals come up, we just check in with the folks and see if they're willing to serve a little longer, I guess.
And once we make the final decision on how we're going to structure this, the final decision will structure all of it.
Right.
And so then it creates a new cadence. So I would do 1 year. I agree with Commissioner Johnson.
What would you think about moving all of these appointments we've done this year, these 1 year appointments, all of them to December 31, 2026?
I get a little nervous about moving everybody expiring on the same month, because it creates a risk that we have a whole lot of vacancies simultaneous mm-hmm. to fill, as opposed to filling them as they come up. And we don't have, I just worry about if something doesn't happen, all of a sudden we have a whole chunk of people falling off of these, versus our cadence now follows their term dates. And as long as staff is on top of it with their term dates, we should be able to follow up when their term dates is. And I'd say anybody we appointed this year, we put them into the, you know, they're another year.
That works, Layla, or because I think you had suggested an RCW that just.
Well, you could do just a resolution for, so we don't have to go through every appointment we made this year. You could conceivably just do a resolution that extends each appointment you made in 2025
for six months
or a year, and then but not changing their date, extend them to a year from whatever, another year from whatever their date of appointment was.
That's fine.
That would be pretty easy to write up, and it would make less paperwork ultimately for you all.
There'd be fewer things would fall.
And fewer things that would fall off or fall through the cracks.
Yeah,
as you're working through. Okay. And it would be very easy to do for either 6 months or a year, depending on what you wanted to do.
I think a year is more practical.
Mm-hmm. If we get it done sooner, it'll change all of that when we implement the new policies. Yeah. So it just gives us a year to.
It's fine. It's okay.
I understand.
This was a high priority for the board, mm-hmm. and it's just, I just get tired of getting disappointed.
Yeah. Get her done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. So yeah, if you could bring a resolution to us for mm-hmm. extending all of those appointments made
in
the 1 year appointments made in 2025 through 2026, extend them for 1 year into 2027, same date, right? Or what?
Or yeah, to the,
you'll do it.
We'll get all the wording squared away.
Okay, that makes that a little easier.
So now we just need to.
So, appointment of position one.
Position one to the BOE, position two from the BOE.
I would take this together and I'm fine with it.
We can just move all the appointments to consent. We don't have.
I will say for the Veterans Advisory Board, I did not put on there only for 1 year, simply because those are.
Right.
That is a much more finite pool from
which right.
to nominate folks. So
right.
That one will be a full term appointment.
Mr. Breland?
Yeah.
So there were no concerns from anyone about anyone had applied. That really is the thing. So we're fine with all of them. We can move all of them to consent. That sounds good.
And we'll move those all forward.
Express our gratitude to the citizens who applied during this time of temporary chaos regarding how long you get to serve on the board. Thank you.
And that's it for
I think that's all we have for Commissioner's office.
Okay.
So now we're ready with facilities. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Welcome. I think this is your first board meeting with us.
It is.
Welcome. And welcome,
team. Good morning.
Good morning, commissioners.
Well, you can sit there. You just have to move the chair.
I didn't know if I wanted to block the camera.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know. First time here. I'm sorry.
You do whatever you want.
It's all good.
You got two cameras for a reason.
Good morning, commissioners. Megan Garfield, office manager, and I have Chris Potts with me, and you've already welcomed John. We have two agenda items. The first is a resolution with San Juan County to transfer the mobile building located in Camino to them to fill an immediate need for their sheriff's department. They are being removed from the place that they are currently housing their sheriff's department. And they reached out and asked if we would be able to transfer this building. I believe Ryan spoke with you guys prior to his departure about this.
I don't recall this conversation.
But no, is this the old sheriff's office?
Yes, the old precinct. I think it's a 1996 modular building that was put in.
Just a temporary house. They want it.
Is it empty?
Yes.
Yeah.
It has been empty since the new Camino administration building was opened and the sheriff's department moved into there.
Have you checked with the sheriff?
any
storage
in there?
They're
putting stuff in there.
Yeah. There was an agreement that they would keep it for 1 year after they moved approximately 5 years ago to store. Basically everything in there was the old furniture and stuff that they abandoned when they moved into the new precinct with new furniture. At this point, it is empty.
Okay.
Yeah. Please confirm.
Just I'm fine with the transfer, but I don't want it back.
So realistically, the wheels have been grinding on what to do with this building. It sits on Public Works property, and I think they want the square footage of parking more than they want the building. It is a 1996 modular that has some needs if we were to leave it there and try to reuse it, but there hasn't been any real push to reuse it. And I think it would be better for the county to let San Juan put it on Lopez Island. Their picture is on Lopez Island, they were leasing space that is now about to be remodeled, and so they've lost their lease. And they, I believe, are building a new building, but that's several years out. So okay. They need something to house their precinct on this Lopez Island. Yeah.
And they've had a contractor come out and evaluate the building.
Oh, okay. They've seen it?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So yes. It's safe to be moved. They're covering the costs of that evaluation as well as the cost to move it.
No cost to us.
And it states that in the resolution that it is all costs fall on the agency.
I'm just astonished anyone would want it and that a contractor said it was okay.
I
remember it was a nasty, nasty thing. How many, maybe 10 years ago it was nasty. There was mold growing all over.
It's not quite that really bad. But it is ugly.
It's more the annex.
It was that building. That
partly because it smelled, because we paved over the septic tank and we couldn't pump it, so we couldn't use the bathroom in the back. Remember that back bathroom that was not approved for use? And so I think that was part of this.
That was the old annex building there.
Yeah. Okay.
The sheriff's precinct is right. It is in rough shape.
I remember seeing pictures of the shower.
Where's the old annex building? Does that have stuff in it?
Maybe it is demolition. It is gone.
That's what the parking lot is for the current sheriff's office.
Yes.
They can have it. Just not give it back.
We're going to give them the time. It's going to be there.
No, right in the contract. No take back.
Right. So it's by resolution. So once once they pick it up and move it, it's there.
Is Nichols Brothers moving it?
I am not sure the company that they had come out, but I'm sure there's not that many that would transport it to Lopez Island.
They basically have a short-term need.
Yeah.
And rather than trying to order and have constructed, and they're going to pay to move it some kind of modular to Lopez Island anyway. If they can grab this one, move it, sure, make it habitable, and use it for 3 years till they can get their new precinct up and running. And then it can be their problem.
We found it mutually beneficial.
Yeah. It's
been used. We'd be throwing good money at bad.
Sheriff's office support.
It takes a lot of work.
Yeah. And so they're ready for that project. So I just am asking that we move that to consent.
Yes.
Yeah. Great. Fine. Jill, Janet?
Yep. 100%.
Okay. And I will also have remind John and send an email to the sheriffs and I believe DEM and make sure all of their things have been removed from that building.
I spoke to Beth this morning.
Oh, great.
She said it was empty. I asked her to verify again for me. Jeez. But
make sure there's no labeling on it when we move it. I don't want
part of the resolution
property sticker.
I then clear title.
Yeah, no, I know, but I don't want it to like go on the ferry with an Island County sign.
Sure. People say, ooh,
right.
Like, what is this?
We can just.
I'm surprised just, you're like, not more concerned that it would be the new logo or the old logo.
I'm concerned that there's
no logo.
I don't believe there's current logo on that building.
There might be signage on the door glass.
Yeah, we'll scrape it off.
Okay.
But yes, and I assume they're going to put it on a barge, not on a ferry.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know if they split in half. I don't know how.
Yeah, it will split in half, but it's still quite large.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it will.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, they'll barge it.
Yep. They have that. That is their part of this.
And they're used to doing that.
Yeah. They built a whole affordable housing project, taking donated buildings from other locations and barging them into San Juan Island.
Yeah.
And did a really cool project there.
Yeah, they were, like I said, they were ready. Like they their director continues to call and he's like, is the commissioners going to go for it? I was like, I believe so. It's on a meeting agenda.
We're going.
So, okay, they will be pleased to know that this is going to consent.
Yeah, somebody let Public Works know that they're going to have their space back.
Yeah, we can do that. Then see, we're making so many people happy. And then the next agenda item is being handled by our project coordinator, Chris Potts, for our Bayshore building, if you want to.
Oh, that's the Bayshore building. I wondered what building it was.
This is actually for the district court building.
Bayshore is next.
Yep, that's going to be the next one. This is for the replacement of the current air conditioning and heating system that they have up there. It's for $88,000, roughly $89,000, and this will replace all the units up there that are currently furnace and air conditioning. There are four sets of units up there with a heat pump system. So it'll be much more efficient. And then we will have the furnaces as a kind of a gas backup if something were to go down in terms of the heat pumps not being able to heat the place. These units are, except for one, the air conditioning units, we believe are all the initial units from when the building was built. So
92.
They've definitely, we've got our money's worth out of them. We had to replace a furnace about 2 years ago, and we'll keep that as one of the blowers for the air conditioning, but we will replace all the other ones, all the rest of the furnaces, as well as all air conditioning units with heat pumps on this.
Is this budgeted?
Yes.
It's part of the CIP for this year.
Okay.
This is also after we were able to replace both the barred units, which are also heat pumps, big 800-pound heat pumps down at the South Sheriff's Precinct. We got that done earlier this summer.
This
they're good to go for a while.
Yeah. Okay.
How do you decide when you're going to do a heat pump versus an HVAC?
This was brought up by the Barron's technician himself. As you know, with mini splits, they're much more efficient. They heat and they cool.
Right.
And it was only a cost of about $1,000 more per unit to replace it. And they're just much more energy efficient. You know, we'll get our money back out of those sooner than we would the other ones, obviously.
But the Law and Justice building, where the other judges are, they're very hot and very cold, you know.
Yes.
We're not doing a heat pump there. We're doing an HVAC there. I'm just trying to understand like why we wouldn't take the most energy efficient option in all scenarios. Is it the size of the building, or I just need to know for no reason other than I don't know.
Then
Law and Justice will get what's called a variable refrigerant flow. It's still a heat pump style system, but it's a very advanced. And so it has the ability to say, if I'm cooling here, I'm pulling heat out of that area. But if I need heating over here, I could take this heating and put it there. Whereas a conventional heat pump either takes heat from outside and puts it inside, or takes heat from inside and puts it outside to cool. So in your larger systems like that, Law and Justice has a giant ductwork system that moves air throughout the building from one air handler on the roof. And then you have individual distribution boxes in each zone or area that decide whether you're heating or cooling. So in Law and Justice, we'll be replacing that unit on the roof with compressors that have this variable refrigerant flow capability. And then the boxes inside that will let them decide, ask, I want heat, I want cool.
So it's like a heat pump, yeah. But we're just calling it an HVAC.
So it's one big HVAC system. When we talk heat pumps there, we're talking HVAC system, but we're talking four smaller systems that are district court is zoned into four separate systems. So rather than having one big unit that controls all, there's four different zones. And so what we're putting in there will be a heat pump, meaning we'll be using direct exchange heating and cooling both directions. And we'll be saving the gas heat for emergency backup, because direct exchange only works down to about 20 degrees outside ambient temperature. Okay. And then, yes, three of those outside units there currently are 1992, I believe.
And that's getting done this year, that building.
That is our plan, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, because those judges are not comfortable.
Oh, Law and Justice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that one is that one's scheduled for next year.
Next year.
Yeah, next. That's what I meant. I was
26.
26.
Yes. Yeah. That's okay. In our CIP for 26. Yes. Yes.
Okay, perfect.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, we know. Yes.
Because we can't have, otherwise everybody's going to run for district court judge so that they're
And then we're going to have that one.
I actually, that's fair. We actually have a contractor walk through in Law and Justice next week.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
And we'll be bringing, more on that, I believe on the 17th, we have a presentation for you guys.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we'd like to move this to consent as well.
That's fine. Yeah, we're okay with that.
Is this what you budgeted for, or is it over budget?
We still have money in the budget.
We still, yeah. It is in between the high and the low. It's closer to the higher side of what we thought it could be, but we are under budget technically.
Okay. Great. One of the things that we keep talking about we just talked about it with our lobbyist for the state. I talk about it almost every other week with our lobbyist to the feds, is about the electrical panel in this building.
Yes.
And part of our difficulty, or my difficulty when I talk with folks about, please give us money to fix our electrical panel, is I lack really good details about exactly what the problem is and what steps we're going to have to take to fix the problem. Do you guys have any kind of, could you put together some kind of presentation for us to just give us to make us better informed?
Yes, yeah. Yes, we could.
We can do that.
The simple synopsis is this building is tied to the main electrical supply that also feeds the jail. Thus, they share a generator. When the jail was built, it was all built with electrical panels from a company called Federal Pacific Electric. About the time the jail was completed, Federal Pacific Electric went out of business because they were caught falsifying their UL certifications on their electrical equipment. So that they were sued by many, many homeowners for burning houses down. And the main breaker over there in the jail, it's huge. It's not like your home breaker. It's basically a diesel electric locomotive over there, you know. Mm-hmm. And if it fails, there's no replacement part for it. The company that built it's been out of business for 40 years. And so there's no replacement part for it, which would leave this building and the jail in the dark.
But we can put it on a generator system, right?
But we don't have generator capability at this point. We would need transfer switches, and that's all part of the big picture.
I thought we had a backup generator that we've been leasing for a year and a half.
We do. It supplies basic emergency lighting and electrical control for doors and cameras in the jail. Control room.
What about the server?
It supplies the server here, and it supplies this basement because this basement was designed to be a disaster relief shelter and an emergency command center. Everything above this basement floor in this building has no emergency backup power.
So it's our emergency generator, which is fairly expensive to lease, is servers, this building, and the jail.
This basement.
This basement, sorry.
And minimal in the jail. So the jails will be without air handling capability in a long power outage. They'll be without kitchen ability in a long power outage. They'll be working with, you know, minimal emergency lights. So if you take this room and imagine, let me say, three lights operating in it, that's what they'll be facing with inmates.
And how much, well, you can tell me offline. I don't expect you have this top of mind, but, you know, we're spending a fair amount of money leasing this generator. Wouldn't we be better served to shift to fixing the problem?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The real fix is we believe that we need a large enough generator to power the jail and this building, but that's probably going to be over $1 million investment. And then you come back to, if we're looking at building a new jail, are we ready to put $1 million investment into the old?
I mean, the generator can move to the new jail, right? It's not like attached to the building, John, right?
Yes, but it has to be engineered for size. And so if we put something that's engineered to work here and then it doesn't fit,
well, we're going to design that building, so we have every opportunity to engineer it for reuse, don't you think? I like to be told I'm right.
just say yes.
So yeah. I wanted to let you know.
You're not.
Say yes.
And then you say yes.
That's brilliant. And then I feel good.
You are right. But if we're not, I mean, I would assume that we're not going to try and recreate what we currently have when we're building a new jail. Aren't we going to try and fit our new
jail?
Well, no. That means if we have to get a generator, if that is our strategy moving forward, then we over engineer it for the current needs,
yeah,
as Jill says, and that, so that it's ready for the future needs. My question that from Melanie's comment is, we can't, it's going to be 3 to 5 years before that facility gets built.
Sure.
I concur with Commissioner Bacon that I'm not comfortable waiting 3 to 5 years to get a solution to the electrical problem we have here. So that's the project paper, I guess, you're asking for.
$1 million generator is one thing. There's also, how do we fix the electrical system in this building?
It would make sense to put those two together. This building's problem really is not in this building. It's in the feed coming through the jail.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
But the electrical system in this building is of no use if you can't get electric to it.
Well, the whole building is probably going to come down. Yeah. So I think what we're looking for is a 5-year solution that keeps everybody safe and keeps everything working. And
we do have a grant that we're signing on for a mobile type generator that I believe the idea was to use it between the admin building and the annex should that need occur.
And I have not dug deep enough in that, no. But for you, yes, you could move it, but if we build a jail offsite somewhere else, we will still want emergency backup power for these buildings.
Yeah.
And our current jail would probably be reused as something, what, I don't know.
I mean, what we've talked about is that regardless, this building is got to change. If you take the jail out, the office space needs to be reconfigured. The jail needs to be reconfigured. So we're not, I mean, this building doesn't have a long future, regardless, just because the way it was designed and some of the infrastructure problems we know are in the building. I mean, the jail, having a jail just takes it out of the building. So all of the, as I don't know why I'm telling you, all the wiring, all of the piping, all the things. I mean, it doesn't interplay well with real life, and you don't get the same longevity out of a building that has a jail in it as you do out of other buildings.
No.
And they're not your ideal residents.
Yeah, and that jail has pretty much lived its life expectancy without a complete remodel. But when you go back to, can we move the generator? The story goes like this. This building was built in 1973 and it had a generator.
Yeah.
And when they built the jail, that generator became the generator for the jail and this building. And that's the one that is sitting out there dead now because they didn't go with a new generator to fit the new jail. They went with an existing generator
Well, I mean, I understand the instinct.
Right.
You want to reuse what you just bought.
Right. And so I think from Ryan's perspective, when we were applying for grants and planning, doing the generator planning, this grant that we received for the mobile generator is that once we figure out what's going on with the jail, that generator will then live at the admin building.
Got it.
And so it will live wherever, like if this building comes down, then it's going to move. And so I think in his planning, that was part of it because he knew that this jail and this building had a limited lifespan. And like I said, those documents are coming before you guys. So we're finished contracting with Department of Commerce for that grant. And so that work can start.
By the way, none of these decisions have been made.
Right.
It's just I like to say things with certainty to emotionally prepare myself for what's about to potentially happen. But right. We haven't made any decisions.
Yes. Right.
Okay. I don't want people to be like, this is what the plan is. It's what the plan is in my head so I can process the number.
Yes. Sure. Yeah. And this is conversation that, you know, as a department we've had.
Yeah.
Since I've been in facilities, just generator planning is one of our priorities to meet the needs of these power outages. But I can work with John and we can prepare a presentation that better explains
really what the problem is and what the solutions can be and
what the downtime looks like.
Yeah. I mean, Ryan telling me, well, we're probably going to, part of the reason it's going to be so expensive, we're going to have to move people out of this building. That's we're going to have to house them someplace else. I mean, there's just a lot of bits, moving parts to this whole issue. But
the document we need for our legislator is the capital costs, sure. Not all of the human
costs. Right, right, right. But we need to understand what all of the costs are so that we can have the bigger picture.
And we can split that apart to, you know, to give you guys what capital costs would be. And then just for clarity, what it looks like when it's down.
So the big thing of the generator and the jail and right. The electrical panel and the moving people around, that's the big thing.
Yes.
The thing we need in a fairly immediate way is Commissioner Bacon's request of how much is the capital cost. I don't want it to get lost or delayed because you're doing the big thing when what we need right now is that smaller piece of that puzzle.
Sure. Yes. Okay. And John and I can work together on providing that to you guys.
Because I know the big thing is complicated. It's all complicated.
Yeah. But we can break that into a smaller something that you guys have to take for your legislative eyes.
We did put $1 million into the capital plan for this project.
I added all of that into ClearGov.
Was it in capital plan beginning in 26 or 27?
26.
Okay, just wanted to confirm that because I couldn't find it when I was looking for it yesterday.
It's because we haven't seen a document that has it on it yet.
So yeah, it's been entered document. Into ClearGov, and then it has also been entered onto the draft CIP.
Yeah.
That Public Works has been bringing forward. I entered that in a few weeks ago
I saw it in the draft. I just couldn't put my finger on the draft and I couldn't remember in my memory. Yeah.
It's listed on the draft. It's utility infrastructure upgrades. And then it in the description lists the electrical panel and for this building.
Okay. Could you get the most updated CIP with those descriptions to Layla because she's going to send it to our lobbyist?
Yes. Yeah. I will make sure I will work with Public Works because I know they're sending stuff as well.
Good reminder. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
I think that's it for
those
us.
Those are our two items.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, all of you, for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Absolutely.
I'll talk so much next time. Emily's.
Okay.
This should take 5 minutes.
Do you want 5, Janet?
No, I'm fine. I'm just
this should take 5 minutes.
No, I just don't. I think we've had a lot of conversation about this particular topic.
We have
in recent. I appreciate because this is what's got to go to the public hearing, right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, depending on which next steps we take, so.
Should we move forward?
Okay. Yep.
Emily Neff, Assistant Director Planning. So we're here today to talk about the countywide planning policies and the reassessment of the housing allocations in the Oak Harbor UGA. So we held a public hearing at the Planning Commission last month on the changes that are proposed to the housing numbers and the population numbers. So I'm here today to kind of summarize what has happened at that public hearing and to get your direction on next steps. So I would like to take a minute just to kind of walk through the steps that led us to this decision again, just for the record, and so that we're all kind of on the same page going into the next steps. So as a reminder, the City of Oak Harbor submitted a proposal to the county on a UGA expansion on April 22nd, 2025. The city's proposal came to us after about a year of ongoing work between the city and the county. We had continual meetings between our planning staff. We also met several times with the State Department of Commerce, and we participated in a third-party mediation session. After about that year of discussions on this topic, we felt that we had made very little progress on the core issues surrounding the urban growth area. From the county's reading of the Growth Management Act, planning for increased densities in a UGA or a UGA expansion requires both an annexation plan and a capital facilities plan. And that's because dense housing types require infrastructure and services, which are typically accomplished through an annexation process. So because the county holds the authority for granting UGA expansions, and the county must defend a UGA expansion in our comp plan in the case of an appeal, we had asked the city for more information about how they plan to serve and support the UGA expansion that was proposed. They declined to provide that further information, and therefore the county did not see that their request was viable. So back in July, we brought some options before the board to consider about how to move forward, and the board directed staff to follow this reassessment process, which is outlined under the WACs in 365, 196, 415, which allows for reducing the population projection to account for the population that couldn't be reasonably accommodated with services in the unincorporated UGA. The reassessment required us to reopen our countywide planning policies to adjust the population and the housing numbers. So planning staff convened what's called the Countywide Planning Group, which is all of the jurisdictions that are involved in our county, to review the proposed changes. We held two meetings with that group before bringing the changes forward to the Planning Commission.
Good.
So the major changes that we made to the countywide planning policies were to adjust the population projection. It was 102,639. The new projection is proposed to be 98,626, which still falls between the medium and low range. The medium and low.
To low.
The Office of Financial Management estimated for Island County. The other change was Oak Harbor's housing allocation. So previously we had given them an allocation of 5,533 dwelling units, which was meant to represent the city limits and the UGA. Their revised allocation is 3,735 dwelling units, which reflects just the capacity for the city limits, not the UGA. So we have, do you have a question before I move to the public hearing?
No.
Okay.
I mean, go ahead and then I'll,
okay,
if I have a question.
So we went forward with the countywide planning policy changes and brought that to a public hearing at the Planning Commission on August 20th. The Planning Commission at the end of the public hearing did vote in favor of the changes to the population projection and revised housing numbers. They voted it was a split vote, 5-3, and their findings of fact was included in the packet today. During the public hearing, we heard three public comments. One was from a staff member at the City of Oak Harbor, and two were from Ween, and those are summarized in the memo included in your packet today as well.
How could Ween be opposed to, I mean, this is a sprawl control action. I mean, we basically were like, you're not justifying your infill well enough for us to acknowledge your demand for a greater growth area. So this is the mechanism we're using to control that. How are they, how is that not in alignment with things they think?
I can't speak for them. The sentiment that was strongly expressed was that the county should keep pushing for them to take the numbers they committed to in the city limits.
Yeah, I don't think sentiment. That they're disagreeing.
They oppose Oak Harbor's intention to do developer-led extensions, having developers have more control over the process than having it.
I don't think that's what that means.
And I don't disagree with you. And then they said that they believe that Oak Harbor, one of the comments was that Oak Harbor would not then be fully absorbing the affordable housing numbers with developer-led extension. So that's what I remember from what I saw.
When you said that this is about reducing Oak Harbor's numbers, this reduces the countywide allocation.
It does. It's
everywhere.
Down to 98,000.
So
right. So the number, and then everybody's allocation reduces. It's not just Oak Harbor's that reduced, right?
So the percentages change.
Yeah. Well,
but their total dwelling unit count for the other jurisdictions did not change.
Yeah, Langley still has to do all the numbers they said they do. So yeah.
So
Coopville.
But does it change the unincorporated portions then?
Yeah. No.
Just reduces for Oak Harbor.
Yes. So I would like to say a few more words about kind of in response to the public comments that we heard during the public hearing, and just some of the sentiments I've been hearing around the community. I'd like to kind of respond about what this reduction means and why we chose this option and kind of the consequences of it. So as you remember, kind of as we approached the housing allocations, initially, our main concern was making sure we were redirecting growth away from rural areas. That's consistent with the Growth Management Act. Mm-hmm. We also, because of the way the state changes with how we have to plan for housing and income levels, our main objective here is to make sure that each jurisdiction was responsible for their fair share of AMI housing. And that's consistent with our countywide planning policies, which expresses kind of a fair share methodology.
Mm-hmm.
So, when we originally broke up all the housing numbers, each jurisdiction took their fair share according to the HAPT tool. When we started conversations with the city of Oak Harbor, we were concerned that they had not taken their fair share of AMI housing. I will say that this reassessed housing allocation, the county pushed hard to make sure that they were using the HAPT tool and taking their fair share of AMI housing. So the 3,700 units that they have planned for the city limits matches the other jurisdictions in terms of what they're taking for AMI distributions, which is a big win for everyone. And their reassessed housing allocation still represents 54% of the total housing allocated across the county. That's huge. In total, our cities between Langley, Coopville, and Oak Harbor, they received 65% of the total housing allocations. So again, this is a huge number that is being directed to growth in urban areas, which is a shift from our past comprehensive plans. And that was our objective with these housing numbers. So if you look at those percentages, we are still making big progress toward redirecting growth to urban areas. We all recognize that there's a housing crisis and that we're not meeting the needs of our communities at the lower income levels. We believe that this shift will make progress toward that, toward the solution of getting more dense housing types and meeting the needs of our community, but we can't solve it in one planning period. In a 20-year planning period, we're not going to completely solve the deficits that exist. And certainly removing some of the allocations are going to make us slower to address some of the lower AMI housing numbers. I think the board recognized that that was a compromise choice that you all made in those options that were presented. None of those options were perfect options, and we accepted those compromises. Because the county's comprehensive plan made commitments for how we're going to meet those AMI levels in terms of adjusting zoning, and we have a moratorium in place, the board felt strongly that you all wanted to move forward and not delay the entire comprehensive plan because of this disagreement with Oak Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
So this option was chosen as kind of the least bad option to move forward with. The county, certainly from our staff perspective, and I don't want to speak for the board, but we are not saying we're walking away from the Oak Harbor urban growth area. We're saying we want to continue conversations, continue studying that area, and set us up for success for that five-year check-in for the next 10-year comp plan update, so that we can continue to plan for infrastructure and services and annexation to support that UGA. Mm-hmm. And to support more dense housing types there. But right now, what we feel like we can accomplish in order to finish our comp plan on time, that this is the best solution and best path forward.
Okay. So to make sure that I understand, so Oak Harbor, which is, you know, as Seattle is to King County, Oak Harbor is to us. And so they were going to, and tell me if I have the numbers wrong, they were going to be taking 64% of the growth. They are now going to be taking 54% of the growth.
That's
so correct. The percentage that's being taken by all of, by unincorporated Island County and Coopville and Langley is increasing as a percentage of the total growth. The numbers that unincorporated Island and County and Coopville and Langley are taking are staying the same as what we had planned before. But because Oak Harbor is going from 64% down to 54%, we are going from, what was it, 102,000 down to 98,600.
That's correct.
Is the projection. Okay. And can you remind me, in 2016, when the board went through this last time and they went with the low projections, and we surpassed the low projections, like, right off the bat, right?
We surpassed them by the time we started planning for this comp plan update. Yeah. So in 2024, we had surpassed many of the projections for 2035.
Okay.
So we were about 10 years early.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we surpassed the 2035 projections in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we went with the middle instead of with the low.
Correct.
But even though probably the higher one would be more realistic, my concern, but this is what we're going to have to do. I mean, I accept this is what we're going to have to do, but I don't think 98,000 is realistic, but okay. It's what we have to do. I'm sorry, Janet.
No, it's okay. I was just thinking out loud. So you're not wrong. But for me, it's that explosive growth happened towards the end of those 10 years. That's
yes.
When we saw the explosive growth. And we are running out of buildable land. Our buildable lands analysis has shifted dramatically from 2016 to today. So I think 98,000 will likely be low too, but I guess in the world of Chicken Little, I'm not sure the sky is falling yet on that analysis.
Yeah. So the reassessed numbers, you're right, take the allocation, the total population down, and take the allocations away from Oak Harbor. We did not want to put that allocation back to cities who have already done
a
large amount of planning with the numbers that they already agreed to.
They played well.
So Langley and Coopville and Island County's numbers remain the dwelling unit numbers they're all planning for, and the AMI levels all remain the same so that planning can go forward. Yeah.
Who's taking the unincorporated UGA population?
So the changes to the countywide planning policies also clarify that the unincorporated UGA is the county's authority, as it is under the Growth Management Act, and the housing that is planned for there will be attributed to the county's numbers.
So, and then I'm obviously going to be fine because, as you described it, this is the best of bad options. I guess what I really want to be talk about in next steps mm-hmm. is what we are willing to permit in those areas, because we need to get that urban density in order for the city to want to annex all of that. I mean, they're not going to annex at low densities with infrastructure. That does not make sense for them, especially newer construction or rebuilding, right? Mm-hmm. That's not something they're going to do. So we've got to somehow come up with some type of agreement with them that really says what we're going to allow in that UGA. And if what we're going to allow is denser housing on extended sewer systems, then we have to be prepared to say there will be no re-permitting of homes in that area. There will be no homes on 5 acres in a septic system. There will be a no until you start being willing to urbanize those UGA areas, which will be a very difficult political shift since we're the ones saying no.
Mm-hmm.
They are not the ones saying
mm-hmm.
no. So I think we're going to have to figure out how to force that UGA area to be desirable to the city.
Yeah.
And that's going to be hard. But I don't see, like, this problem is going to continue over because they're going to want to move around these developed UGA areas because there's not a plan to necessarily pull them in. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, you know, Freeland, I'm just going to put this on the record. Maybe they'll hear it. Freeland, our plan is we're going to study what our options are. And we're telling the state that, look, we're looking at this and this is what we're trying to do. And we're planning for this growth here. And our plan to deliver this infrastructure is to figure out how we're going to deliver this infrastructure. We've set aside money to do that. That doesn't mean that we're spending money to build the infrastructure. It means we're figuring it out because we know we're going to need it. There's nothing keeping from Oak Harbor from doing the exact same thing to say, we're going to study how we're going to provide this sewer to this area. This is what our plan is. It can be developer led. They could say, we're going to apply for rural county economic development funds to put the sewer pipelines down the street. The same thing Langley did, applied for and got. They could do that and then say, individual connections are left up to the private homeowner or developer. That's a plan. They just got to get some words on a piece of paper so that we have something to turn in. I think that's what we're doing.
So in order for us to accomplish what she's saying in the UGA, do we need to change any county codes associated with those, you know, those parcels, rezone those?
Long-term, likely, yes. What I'll say is I agree that, you know, even the city's comments in our public hearing were that, you know, we're very much about that an interlocal agreement needs to be updated to plan for that urban growth area and how to densify that area and serve it. And we don't disagree. Absolutely. We think, you know, those conversations need to continue. This does not mean those conversations stop. I think we need to hash out an interlocal agreement about how the zoning would change to support more densities and how those developer-led extensions would happen to make that area more enticing for redevelopment if that's the way we're going to get sewer into those neighborhoods. So those conversations need to continue, and they will continue.
Can I clarify what you just said and what's on the paper in front of
yeah.
me and what Commissioner Johnson's suggesting? Commissioner Johnson's suggesting that they plan. They begin to plan for infrastructure needs to expand the UGA and provide, you know, service to
not expand growth. The UGA, expand the city limits.
Expand the city limits. Thank you. I misspoke. And then you said they sort of that the public input disagreed with the need to plan, and they are willing to plan. Yet CAC says here in the public input, the city does not agree it should have to spend money on planning for infrastructure prior to the comp plan being complete or prior to private investments and annexation. That is absolutely inconsistent with what we're saying here and what the county is doing to begin. So I've got words in the packet here that say they are unwilling to invest in infrastructure improvements and a plan, or they're not even willing to invest in a plan. I get that you have to have, they're not ready to put the infrastructure in right now, but the sentence says, we are not willing, does not agree to spend money on planning.
I think that is lack of understanding of options. We have not spent a dime on our plan. We put in the capital improvement plan that we were going to spend REIT dollars on planning. We put it out for a couple years. We could shift it a couple more. Not saying we would do that, but we could. We haven't done anything. What we're demonstrating is to the state that we have allocated some money in a plan to deal with this issue.
Yes.
Oak Harbor could allocate money in a plan to
yes.
deal with this issue and not write a check. So I'm not yelling at you. I'm
no,
not
I know.
A CAC. I'm like, I don't understand.
And let me add one thing. Sorry, I'm interrupting you.
Piece of paper. Just put it on a piece of paper. That's all.
And we chose to approach the legislature as a priority to pay for planning and studies. They have that same opportunity to go after planning dollars and studies to address the infrastructure issues.
Right.
This, and I'm not sure if he speaks for all of the city or not, I just disagree with this statement in the public input, because it is not fair to have one set of rules for everybody else, or expectations, maybe not rules, and to have the county and all the other partners step up. That said, the question before us is not to debate this and relitigate the whole argument. The question before us is, you know, this is where we landed. The Planning Commission voted 5-3, and we've had public input. Basically, a lot of the public input has decried Oak Harbor's approach, but we're now at a point where we're trying to find a compromise and a path for it. So I apologize for grandstanding for a moment.
Okay, I'm sorry that it was a 5-3 vote. That makes me a little uncomfortable. Those three people who voted against it, are you able to talk at all about what their concerns were?
Their concerns largely were around not meeting the needs of our community in terms of housing.
That 98,000 isn't enough.
Yeah, and that the allocations removed from Oak Harbor represent, you know, 743 units of 0-50 AMI housing that we desperately need, mm-hmm. and they won't be built. And that was unfortunate. That's the sentiment we heard.
It is, yeah.
Which is true.
I think we all agree that not planning for the full impact is risky and counterintuitive to the desire to provide affordable housing. And I mean, it does feel counterintuitive in some ways. But the other option is, we know, going to lead to a challenge that we won't be able to survive, because we have to demonstrate how those existing UGA areas were pulled into the city before we went to new land, and how the zoning's going to work, and what the plan is to urbanize those areas. And without that, we're going to do a UGA expansion, and the hearings board will say nope and kick that right back out, and we're going to be at the exact same place. And so I just feel like what the community's worried about is true. I also think that that's going to happen regardless. And so it's better just to own it up front and then work on that interlocal agreement on how we're going to address these areas separately. And I do want to say, to Janet's point about the sewer, we have done more than just put our sewer study in the CIP. I mean, we've done the wastewater proviso. Mm-hmm. We're talking about pilot projects. We are working towards it.
We're trying to get the state to change right. the law.
But I think the part that we're demonstrating to the hearings, to the state, is we've set aside this money to really start working on this project. That's all Oak Harbor has to do, is in their plan, set aside money in a plan to say they're working on this project. If they say they're going to do it in 2026 and they need to shift it to 2027 or 2028, this is an exercise. This is a government-directed exercise that, yes, has some real-world ramifications. It's also like, literally, look, I'm sure people went to college better than I did, but I used to have these papers that they say you have to demonstrate so many footnotes and sources. I didn't do that. I used one book, rewrote a bunch of stuff, and then I just pulled books off the shelf and put my footnotes in, turned in my paper, and got like a B-. It's fine, right? Turn in your paper and get your B-. Let's move, people. I got a degree. Nobody went back and checked my thesaurus sources. They didn't pull the books off the shelf. I just had to have so many footnotes I referenced. Who was checking?
So
that's all I'm saying.
Commissioner, recently I had an event with, and some city council members were there, and I was talking about this, and these particular city council members, I won't raise their names, but they were mortified because they didn't know any of this was going on until they read about it in the newspaper. Is there any value to you taking this conversation to a city council member, to a city council meeting,
and just letting the council members know that they have this option, that they, that surely to God, nobody has ever told them. And I know they don't listen to our meetings.
I mean, I could, what I would say maybe is that that would be like a city council member coming in here and saying, Emily doesn't know how to do her job. And here's the idea. I mean, I think probably the better plan is I should just call CAC and say, you have options other than that sentence. And why are we not using some of these options? Or I could talk to the mayor and say, why are you not using some of these options? Although he did tell me I was allowed to talk to CAC because I did ask. But I hesitate to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I just feel bad that the council feels, at least these members of the council feel that they are not informed.
Yeah.
We did do a joint meeting.
And they said they thought that it was all taken care of at our joint meeting, that we were going forward. Mm-hmm. They were going to accept everything that we had recommended, and that was what the path.
Interesting.
So they were surprised to read in the newspaper that that's not what happened.
Interesting.
Because that meeting, we were focused largely on the HAP tool. You have to take your share of the AMI numbers. Then the conversation became about, I guess, I had kind of assumed that they were using their existing UGA and that they knew they needed to densify that and they knew they needed to have an expansion plan for that. And they took, we did the HAP tool so we get to expand. We knew based on those population numbers, they needed to expand. They don't have those population numbers anymore, so they're going to have to redo their math. But without doing that UGA work, and putting the density in there and demonstrating what their sewer expansion plan would be, we don't have any justification for that expansion. We can't say you can skip over that and go develop this raw land over here. Right. I mean, that just isn't going to sell. And I think there's just case after case from all these different counties that demonstrate that that's not going to work. And so we're basically just cutting to the end of the line. But I think they have options on demonstrating what we need them to demonstrate that are not going to require them to put taxpayer dollars out there in a risky way, which I'm sure is what they're worried about. Mm-hmm. They don't want to risk that. I wouldn't either. But that's not what they're being asked to do right now. What they're being asked to do right now is show a plan. And a plan is like footnotes on a college paper. You put them there to meet the requirement. And then you get your degree. And then you become a county commissioner. I'm sure every single person who went to college who did actual footnotes is furious right now. But y'all should have gone to
that way.
That's all I'm saying.
So the question today is, what do we do from here? So the board has a couple options. The board does have the choice of using the Planning Commission's public hearing as the basis for your decision. So this could move forward to regular session. And if we did that, it could move forward in September to one of your regular sessions. And as a reminder, then it needs to go to the jurisdictions to ratify. So it would go to the jurisdictions in October and November for ratification. The board could alternatively decide to hold your own public hearing to hear more input on this before you make a decision. If you do that, the board staff has held October 14th as the public hearing date, so that will push it out another month, and then it would go to the jurisdictions in November, December to ratify, which might be difficult timing. So we could be looking at the beginning of the year before we could get this all wrapped up.
I'd take the public hearing from the Planning Commission.
Yeah, I would too.
I would too, because at some point you just have to rip off the Band-Aid.
And we've had lots of I'm sure you've all had lots of input on this,
yeah,
including from one or two of the planning commissioners that voted against it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So regular session. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the issues we're concerned about have been stated by the public and we don't disagree.
Yeah. No, they're
but
right.
We don't have options that are more palatable. So new information isn't going to change what the outcome is. This is the Planning Commission made the right recommendation and they held a public hearing.
Okay. Any other questions for me?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for your work.
I guess I do have a question. So what's the next steps then? We do this in September. we adopt, we, and then it goes to be ratified. What are the next steps with regard to our comp plan then?
So we were hoping to get your input here today, and we will map out a schedule for kind of a revised comp plan schedule, but we need the countywide planning policies to be approved by you and then ratified before we can say, yes, these are the numbers we can put in our comp plan document and publish our full drafts. So we'll put a new schedule together based on kind of this projected timeline.
Okay.
And let you know.
And if the population numbers change, there's a mechanism that exists to redocket urban growth area expansion. That conversation, it doesn't mean it's not going to happen for another 10 years. It could happen at any point that board agrees to docket a UGA expansion conversation. If there's justification for it, if the numbers show, if the population growth is happening, if something changes in the city on the ground, a dynamic, there's a way to open that back up. Just like we open up any other element, right?
So we don't get a new population projection, but if we're blowing the projections out of the water, we right. can have another conversation. And there is that 5-year mandated check-in now on our housing numbers. Right. So there's lots of opportunities to revisit.
I don't need a new population projection. It would be a rezoning, and we can rezone at any time.
We can rezone the existing UGA, expanding it.
We have a process for that. That's what the whole rights crossing drama was about.
Oh, yeah.
That guy docketed that expansion and the city said, oh yeah, without any numbers or facts or EIS, but we could do all of those steps if there's demand and we're seeing the population growth and there's a request to review it. We could go through all of those justifying processes to say, is a UGA expansion warranted? We would just have to docket that conversation, I think, and then do all of the work that what we would use to defend it. I don't think you can only expand your UGA every 10 years, or we wouldn't have ever been able to have that right crossing debacle, which I would have preferred because that was a drama. But I mean, that we docketed that conversation at the request of a city. And they didn't do any of their work. They didn't show their work. They didn't get it. But it's not that it's not like we're held to this plan so intensely that there's not an opportunity to revisit some of these conversations, just like we could open an element at any point. I'm pretty sure.
We can do a locally initiated comp plan amendment once a year.
Yeah.
But we can do the population, not the population, the housing adjustment, we have to do at 5 years.
At 5 years, we have to have a check-in.
Right.
Yes.
But that's not what I was.
Yeah. You're saying we can do, we can docket any change in land use policies as needed to respond to the emerging circumstances.
If there's justification. On the other point, I hope people take away from this, and I know they won't, but this is the perfect example of the imperfect nature of what we're trying to do, right? So there's a lot of people who are holding out for this absolute purity in this process. And this process is a best guess and guidance towards the future, but it's not perfect. And it will never be perfect for everyone. In this case, we chose the best option of some not ideal options. And there's gonna be a lot of policy decisions we make, which it's like, yeah, this would be perfect, but this is what we could get to in the next 10 years, or this is the best first step we can take, or this is how we're going to balance the tensions between, you know, that's what this is going to be, is just a reflection of all the different things we're trying to do, and we're going to end up with some imperfect outcomes. We just have to mentally prepare ourselves for the fact that it's not going to be ideal. That includes you as well and your team of perfectionists who want it all perfect, and in reality we're going to do the very, very, very best we can do, and then there will be another group of planners who will come in and improve upon our very, very best, and that's how the process works. It's not one and done.
It's a good reminder,
and this is the perfect illustration.
Okay. Anything else, Emily?
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you both very much
Thank you.
For being here.
And we are not going to be having the budget workshop that was scheduled for this afternoon, nor the budget workshop that was scheduled for tomorrow afternoon, because we're not really ready for those. Do either of you have anything else for the record or that you wanted to talk about today?
No.
Okay. Then this meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everybody.